Four Midwest Guys presents
The Night's Watch, a Game of Thrones podcast.
Night gathers, and now my watch begins. I am the sword in the darkness. I am the watcher on the walls. I am the shield that guards the realm of men.
We watch, we listen, and we remember.
The past is already written, the ink is dry.
I thought he was the man to lead us through the long night. And I was wrong.
I'll show them what Lannisters are. What we do to our enemies.
How do you know this?
That's what I do. I drink, and I know things.
I believe men of talent have a part to play in the war to come.
I will never set them right.
You could help another client with those steps and take that seat.
I'm not going to stop the wheel. I'm going to break the wheel.
They have no idea what's going to happen.
The wheel of war is between the living and the dead. And make no mistake, the dead are coming.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Four Midwest Guys Presents The Night's Watch, a Game of Thrones podcast. Tonight, we'll be reviewing the episode Home. With me today is my brother, Aaron.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Pretty good. Stephanie's back.
Hi.
And the Dirty Jay-Z.
That's what I do. I drink and know things.
And if I ever have another idea like that, hit me.
Punch me in the face.
Punch
me in the face.
So, there you go.
I didn't kill Joffrey, but I wish I had.
There you go. We got our Tyrion quotes out of the way for the day. So,
till next week.
And then that's the show. Thanks for joining in.
Kidding. Good night.
Wow, what an episode. I mean, talk about just an absolute jam-packed episode from beginning to end, start to finish. This thing kicked last week's episode.
It was a bit more fast-paced than last week.
Yeah.
We had, like, last week was, like, setting up everything. Yeah. This is the one that said, hey, this is what we set up, and we are moving on with it.
You know, I almost wish that they had taken last week's episode and this week's episode and just made a two-hour special.
Oh, that and just put beautiful. It back to back.
I feel like you kind of want that with a lot of things, though. Like, if we go other to, like, the Star Wars shows or anything else. Like, you just want to, like, binge everything in, like, one go.
They could do a two-hour season finale, and I'd even be okay with that.
Yeah,
the series finale is pretty much going to be, like, you know, three-hour-long movies.
A whole day.
Yeah.
It's just going to be, like, one whole day of watching.
HBO comes to the decision, we can't put this on TV, we'll put it on film. Send it out to the theaters.
And it outgrosses every Marvel Cinematic Universe film ever.
It would probably come close, to be honest.
And that's a
Avengers,
blew it out of the water. It just made $4 billion.
Here's some dragon's fire for you, Avengers.
All right. So, the episode opens, and we see Bran, finally.
But we start with Bran's vision before that.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. And we open up, I think they briefly show him with holding the...
Yeah, they show him briefly, eyes closed.
Eyes, he's doing the thing.
The warging.
Yeah, he's doing it with the three-eyed crow. The old man, a.k.a. the three-eyed crow. So he's in there doing his warging, and... brought back to Winterfell, and we're introduced to some characters that at least we don't recognize at first.
Because we see them
But then we hear names, and we're like, what?
We hear names like Ned.
Yeah, I think it's the first instance where it shows like him.
Let's not forget the L of R and L equals J.
Yeah. I think this is the first time you really see them like actually go back in time in their visions. And that's, it's an interesting little twist to it, actually. He's like... I was not aware that was part of the power.
I thought it was just present day. Yeah.
You know, thinking about that, it actually makes me wonder if, you know, the God of the Flames is kind of related to the Three-Eyed Raven.
Maybe.
If maybe it's just like, you know, the one, you know, how people feel about religion, how one person, each religion has a part of the whole scheme.
Yeah. Hey, it could be.
Well, I mean, it's so hard to say because, like, in the Game of Thrones literature, you have a lot of the old gods, you have the God of the Flames, you have the drowned god. Like, there's so many variants of religion within the universe, but you don't really go into too many of the details, so it's kind of hard to say.
We've only heard the god of light, and then the old gods and the new gods. That's all we've heard of so far.
Well, that, and we have the many-faced god, which does
we have the many-faced god, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which
I need a chart.
Will not give me my Starbucks order, because I do not have a name, apparently.
Yeah, we'll get into it later, but we also now have the drowned god as well.
They had that in the Iron Islands for, like, I think it's season or two back.
Yeah, it did, but
it doesn't go into them too heavily. It you do see, like, their burial thing later on in the episode. That's kind of cool.
I thought that was pretty wicked. Yeah,
okay. Like, it's an interesting day.
We're jumping ahead, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, we totally are.
Tristan and Shandy, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
So, let's talk about this. So, we see Ned Stark. We see Ned sword training with his little brother.
Benji.
The guy who disappeared long ago into the wilderness, and we haven't seen him since.
Probably won't see him again, because I'm pretty sure he died.
Benji was killed, and they brought him back.
Season 1 or season 2?
And they burned his body.
Did they?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Maybe they did.
They found him dead. Yeah.
All right, so...
she'll be my Wikipedia.
So, not only do you have Ned Stark and his brother, and Benji, and then, for the first time ever, we get to finally see...
Willis.
Well, not just Willis, but also
Lyanna,
yes.
And... also known as Hodor, two of us loyal fans.
Yeah, yeah, so you hear him talking, and you see he's actually, he's like functional.
So could this be history's origin of the What You Talking About Willis?
Maybe. So...
I drink and make terrible jokes, that's what I do.
So Lyanna, the one that there's a statue of, apparently, that we never saw, and that the one
she
that...
died when she was 16, and...
Whatchamacallit, Baratheon, the king...
Robert Baratheon.
Robert fell in love with, and something, she ends up getting killed. So we see her ride in on a horse. We find out that that Hordor's first name is Willis.
And actually was very coherent and spoke and interacted with everybody like a normal human being.
Yeah. And not only that, but they also made mention that he had giant's blood in him. Now, I don't know if the kids there... we're just teasing, or I wonder if there's any kind of truth to it. Is that why Hordor is kind of a little bit more
big
and stocky?
He's just like
fourth
generation giant.
Yeah, like
he's like
watered down giant. You know,
he's 1/8 giant.
Yeah, so I don't know. So I thought that was interesting. What do you guys think? Do you think he might be part giant?
Well, it would fit with the literature, or like with kind of the mythos. I think
it wouldn't be out of the question, but. Yeah, I mean, we've seen how big some of these other giants are in this show, especially on the attack of the North Wall.
Yeah. So my other question, because we get to see this little preview, and they keep hinting and they keep talking about the history of the show, which could just be writing and showing that there's depth and history there, but I'm wondering if we're going to see a prequel series. What do you guys think of a prequel series?
Oof.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Prequels and me don't sit well.
Well, yeah, as we all know.
I honestly think that if they do show some history scenes from throughout the show and throughout the season and stuff like that, that would be fine. But if they do a prequel series on its own...
Well, yeah, because you could do the whole War of the Five Kings or the lead-up to the War of the Five Kings.
Yeah, no. Because then you don't have the same actors and...
Well, sure.
Well, yeah, you don't have the same characters, but...
It won't be the same.
I think with prequels, that's where it's such... a fine line to tread, because you've gotten so attached to certain characters, and by the time the prequels are over, you know who's going to live.
Mm-hmm.
So you've pretty much gotten rid of any kind of tension about, oh, he's about to ready to have someone cut his head off. Is he going to survive? Oh, wait, I've already seen him later on down the show.
So yeah, so you know who survives, who doesn't.
Right, well, which is kind of what has been... Game of Thrones is bread and butters to see who lives and who dies.
The only thing out of those three kids and Hodor that I want to see is why did Hodor stop talking? Mm-hmm. One. And two, you know, was he protecting Lyanna and something happened or you know, whatever, and maybe that's why he isn't talking anymore.
Well, we have another interesting little aspect about, because while Hodor has been protecting Bran this whole time, he's never really gotten physically involved with protecting him. And we actually kind of see why now. Like, his mother actually told him, don't you fight, don't fight. So he's got something in him from, like, he still listens to his mom. And, like, I won't fight.
Well, she's like, he's going to be a stable boy, and that's it. So.
Yeah, she wants him to be very kind of mellow and not, like, a warrior or anything like that.
Yes. Probably not giving into his giant's blood.
Maybe. That could be. That's a good point. All right, so next scene where the wildlings show up just in the nick of time as Castle Black traitors, as I'm going to call them, are about to break through the door, and suddenly the wildlings show up with a giant. The giant throws a guy like a rag doll. Freaking awesome.
Yeah, it kind of has like Hulk and the Avengers sort of feel to it.
It did, very much so, yeah.
If you
it's
actually,
a very good analogy.
If you saw like Loki become a smear across the
pavement. Yeah.
Like an actual smear of blood across
the pavement. This went a little farther, admittedly.
Yeah, I love the one guy. Like, he thinks he's gonna take him out with an arrow. The guy, Giant just turns around, like, really, just and just like him. Just grabs him and throws.
Yeah, he's like,
right. What was it? Right in front of Thorn too. Drops him right in front of Thorn.
Yeah.
I mean,
just a few seconds later, everyone just drops their swords. Like,
yeah, because you kind of realize, like, oh well, maybe I didn't hate Jon Snow that much.
I give up.
I'm sorry.
Just everyone's like, they have dozens of people, and the giant alone would take us all out. So
we're good.
Yeah.
I'll forget. So yeah,
except for, you know, Bastard Thorn and Bastard Little Child.
Yeah, they're the only ones that decide to attack and are easily the boys thrown off. And
well, I mean, they're both taken to prison. Like they could have. And again, showing mercy, they could have easily, in Game of Thrones fashion, killed them in a very satisfying
scene. Yeah, they could have just had the giant just throw him over the wall.
And honestly,
or wherever.
And honestly, in some fashion, I thought Thorne was going to die, and I was surprised that he didn't.
I thought that'd be like kind of a quick retribution, like,
try
to take over, will you?
Somebody has to pay, but I guess he's going to see his day in court, so to speak.
Go ahead.
I think he's going to see a snow day, but, you know, that's just me.
I think one theme that has been going on in this episode, as we'll get to later on, regimes are known to fall. Like, a lot of heads are known to,
They don't last long.
Yeah. Dorne, we saw last week, and this week, as we get to later on, whoever's in charge, it's not forever.
Yeah.
Which
I think at the turn of every election year is always a good reminder.
Well, I mean, if you look at history, even, you know, entire empires fall. Like, you have, like, the Mongols that conquered most of the world. You had the Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. Even the biggest of, you know, conquerors, you know, fall to the ground in time.
At some point in time,
I mean, that's what the show has always been an analogy of, is, you know, it's got its basing on, like, the War of the Roses and
it takes a lot.
Historical.
It takes a lot from history.
All right, so we can move into the next thing, which I like to call the weakness of King Tommen.
It opens. How are you a Lannister?
Yeah, exactly. But this whole thing opens with a drunk man talking about how he showed his cock to
Cersei. And it was the most glorious thing she's ever seen. And then Stannis Baratheon shows up, and his penis is huge. It's just nothing but a bunch of wieners.
Okay. That's not really what happens. But anyway, so the drunk goes to piss on the wall somewhere. The mountain just happens to be there. Zombie mountain. And just pushes him into the wall and kills
Mountain's
him.
Mountain's dying.
The mountain just, like, slams his head against the wall, like, spraying blood everywhere. Just walks away.
It's a very quick, just
quick skull crush.
Probably the funniest moment I'd seen in the show in a
while. I don't know. Between that and, like, the giant just whipping the ragdoll body around, like, they were both kind of oddly comedic moments.
You know, the show knows how to have that fine line of, like, the most horrific violence becoming the funniest thing you'd seen on screen.
But they've never had that before. I mean, honestly, they've never had a comedic kill before. Well, and they've had two
in the first, like, 10 minutes.
They might be poking fun of themselves at this point.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, maybe, and they've had, like, fun with violence before with Tyrion slapping Joffrey. I mean,
I think that everyone loved that moment.
Everyone loved that moment.
Like, there was enough emotional build-up where everyone wanted to do it, it was such a payout when
someone,
he does
like,
it.
Like, reaching up and slapping this kid in the face.
Yeah. But moving on, so apparently Tommen keeps his own mother from Marcella's funeral because he fears, because the high priest has said she can't attend.
Yeah.
Dick move, bro.
The scepter.
At the same time, though, later on in the episode, or actually like a scene later in the episode, it was like, oh, that was probably a valid choice on his end.
But
like,
it,
you see,
Like it was, but at the same time...
It shows his fear and his lack of leadership and the balls, essentially.
Well, or it shows how strong like the actual religious order is within the city. Like,
right.
They have more or less the Queen of the Empire in their grasp, and...
And the king afraid of him. Like, the king could have easily made some kind of show and said, hey, anyone shows up, we will take your entire sect.
Well, did I mean, I don't know if you three caught this, but when he apologizes to his mother, or when... You know, he tells his uncle, quote unquote, father.
Uncle Daddy.
We are in Kentucky, so why not?
Well, it is the southernmost kingdom.
So anyway,
well, outside of Dorne, but that's more the Caribbean.
Yeah, he tells them.
So it's like Florida. Know,
I let them do this all this stuff to my mother. Not once, not one time, did he talk about his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was all about his mother.
That's true.
So it's like, what about your wife that's still in prison, kid? Hello?
This one that you're supposed to really love and have tried everything to get her out.
Yeah. It was a very quick marriage at this point.
Wow. But he's just, I think it's, I don't know if it's just, he's just a kid who doesn't want, was given the throne, was not prepared, or if he really just doesn't have the balls without his mom to back him up.
How are you a Lannister?
Precisely, you know? So eventually
at the same time, like in terms of actually being a fit ruler in time, he probably had more going for him than Joffrey does.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of growing up that needs to be done for him to be
fit. Well, he's obviously a lot kinder than Joffrey. Anybody with any kind of a
He's not a madman.
You know, he's not crazy.
Yeah. No. I mean, after like the last four kings that Westeros has had, two of them were mad. The third was a drunk, and now the fourth is a weakling. But, I mean, after Joffrey, I mean, it's kind of... I mean, you almost want something refreshing that you have a kinder one, but then you realize maybe its world is not ready for a kind king yet.
Not in the current climate.
I mean, winter... I don't know, is it still coming, or is it, like, freaking here with the...
Well, it hasn't spread south yet. It's definitely in the north.
Yeah.
It's probably about to hit the wall.
Yeah, I mean, shit's about to hit the wall.
It's coming down.
I mean, you don't even have a north, you know, the Knights, you know, the Watch out there anymore. I mean, no one's watching the wall.
They're all kind of infighting.
Pretty much, they're infighting. The wildlings are inside the wall. I mean, there's
mass chaos and pandemonium.
Right, the White Walkers are going to overthrow this wall and come through at any minute now.
The interesting thing is, like, if you look back to the past season, Snow's plan was, like, we kind of need the wildlings to help defend the wall.
Right.
And then the rest of, you know, the people in the Watch were like, we spent the last 1,000 years keeping those efforts out.
Well, now his plan's kind of unfolding.
Yeah, well, now it's just the Watch might be destroyed and you might just have the wildlings watching the wall at this point.
Which is fine.
It's okay.
All right, so let's turn it back to King's Landing. Back to the next scene, which is where we see Jaime with King Tommen briefly. He basically just says, essentially, they have a little small conversation, and most of it is, go talk to your mother and ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
After that, though...
It's a very parental moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But after that comes the better scene, and that's where Jaime versus the
Scepter.
High Sparrow, whatever.
It's the High Sparrow.
Yeah,
High
whatever Sparrow. It is. Scepter. The High Priest of...
the guy from Tomorrow Never Dies.
Pretty much, yeah. So...
No, what's the name actor?
So, yeah. So what'd you guys think of that scene? Because they go back and forth. They go back and forth. There's saber rattling, literally, by Jaime.
Yeah, there's that nice quote, would you spill blood in, like, a holy area sort of thing.
It reminded me very much of, like, the Klingons, perhaps today is a good day to die. Mm. Like, you know, well, yeah, you can kill me, but they're going to kill you. Because he brings out his guards and surrounds them.
Even, like, the High Sparrow even says, like, you will probably kill me before they reach you.
Right. Well, I don't even think it's probably. It's like, you'll kill me before they get close. You'll kill me before they
reach me, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it's a somewhat of a stalemate.
Yeah, like, and there's that nice kind of quote where he's talking about, like, how individually we're very weak, but together we can overthrow a kingdom sort of thing.
It's, yeah, he said, but we've overtaken an empire.
Yeah, he has. I mean,
I was like, oh.
Yeah, he's proven it, like, from what we've all said. Like, you know, he's made the king afraid of him.
And obviously there's going to be a showdown coming up. I mean, do you guys think that the Sparrow, this High Sparrow, do you believe that he wants the throne? Or do you think he's trying to purge the Empire?
I think he's purging the Empire to put himself or his thoughts and his motives in play. Because he's never once said he wants the throne. He's always said that he just wants to inspire. But the thing is what he's inspiring. He's almost like a David Koresh.
He's very much a religious fanatic in that regard. Like, he doesn't really care about whether he lives or dies. He believes in what he's saying.
Right. And it's one of those,
he wants his order and power.
And this is a strange thing. Is like, you know, how do you kill or remove someone who basically has set his entire life up to be a martyr?
Very carefully.
Yes, you really do, because he's literally stripped himself of every personal possession and identity.
In the shadows, you don't do it out in public, you do it...
So you don't think he has any political aspiration? You believe it's purely religious?
I think it's purely motivated by his beliefs. It's a belief motivation.
Okay. All right, I just wanted to throw that out to you guys, because I almost had like a feel of like kind of like the bishops, you know, the Catholic Church bishops with the
I think if his order took power, you would have that in time. Like, you would definitely have people going through that order to gain power.
Yeah.
But him himself looks very much like a fanatic that is motivated by belief and by his, you know, actual convictions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's fair. All right. So next scene, Tommen basically asks Cersei for forgiveness. She forgives him. And then he said, please help me be stronger. Mm. So, basically, I believe the bitch has been unleashed. And war is coming.
You know what? Tomorrow's Mother's Day. And it's Game of Thrones night. And I think Mama's gonna come home again.
Her mom's come home to roost.
Yeah.
So Cersei is the queen behind the crown at this point.
Cersei has always been the queen behind the crown.
You might think Marjorie might be the queen. That's cute.
But she's in a cell, so she's
kind of out of the way for a minute.
Yeah. And we haven't seen anything from this season from her. So.
But I'm pretty
sure. Well, she's in this episode as well.
Yeah.
Like, was she much? Or?
Yeah. She's talking to the High Sparrow briefly in her cell.
Hmm. But I honestly think that Mama's coming back, and it's not going to be good.
I don't think it's going to be pretty. My question to you guys would be, do you think this is the end of Tommen's innocence? Is this the point where Tommen learns to be a ruthless king from his mother, of all people?
You know what? Seeing that scene where she hugs him and says, always, son, you almost saw... This sweet little boy get hugged by the devil.
You know, and this, here's the thing. You know, Game of Thrones, like, for the first couple seasons, you hated Cersei so much, but her one redeeming quality was always the fact that she would do anything for her children. Mm-hmm. And we know the prophecy of the witch that she spoke to that said that she was going to bury all three of her kids. I don't know if it's so much like he's going to end up being ruthless as much as he is going to be reckless, and the reckless is going to be his undoing.
And that's a fair point.
I'm not really sure if you'll see him being ruthless or reckless as much as you'll just see his mother kind of taking charge from behind to an extent, like where she's kind of running orders, she's running the castle again, where she kind of...
Which in a sense is reckless, letting Cersei have that.
You can make that argument, but she might kind of just kind of keep him in his high tower to an extent.
Like he did to her during the funeral.
That's more or less. And she'll just release, the mountain upon the populace.
And that's what my question is will we ever see him actually be king? Or is he going to be a puppet?
To be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if he's actually killed off this season by either the snakes from Dorne or from other characters within the show.
Giving Jaime the crown.
Yeah. Yeah. So, more or less, I would imagine that it's Cersei in charge until he's killed off, and then we'll see how that transfers.
Mm, interesting.
You know, the one thing I think is always, has interested me, like, watching this show progress has been watching how characters we've come to hate have become characters we've actually come to somewhat sympathize or respect in a way.
Maybe.
One of them being Jaime Lannister for me.
I have a hard time with that guy.
Yeah, but there's something I think that kind of redeemed him a bit after season 3 when he went back to protect Brienne. And there is something in him. I mean, outside of the raping his sister in front of the grave of their children.
That was the part where that's the part where I was like, I was almost rooting for him, and then I saw that. I'm like, no, you're still a bastard.
He's still a bastard. Well,
the thing is, like, even like the show's comment on like his rape of his sister, like it's kind of unclear whether it was intended to be that or whether it was just being forceful or if it was
something that they were both used to. I mean, this was something that they did back in the first couple episodes.
Yeah, like, the show took a very unclear path on that scene.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on, guys. Let's get to a favorite scene of mine, and a favorite scene, I think, of John's, perhaps of the entire season. So
maybe the series.
We find out, we move on back to, Marine. We move to Marine, and we move to see Tyrion, and then it's revealed through the council meeting that they've lost the other two cities back to the slavers, and it's just Marine now. Mm-hmm. And that's all that they hold, and that they've lost communication with the other two towns. So that usually means invasion is coming at some point.
You would assume, especially after the loss of their navy or their ships.
Right. Mm-hmm. So upon hearing this, Tyrion's like... He has an idea. He's like, dragons do not do well in captivity. Mm. And that's where John quoted the line earlier. He said, well, how do you know this? I drink and I know things.
I know things. Mm. I drink and I know things.
So, well, he actually gave like an interesting explanation for it as well, because he could quote, you know, like how his empire kind of held dragons for years. Yes. And like each generation they just shrank until
they became house pets.
Yeah, until like they were the size of like a cat or a dog.
They domesticated them. Yeah. I thought that was very interesting.
And I think that's the build up to my favorite scene. Is he says, the one thing dragons are, they're intelligent and they're loyal. And then he does something that I think anyone watching that would have not even considered doing themselves. And he puts himself into that pit where Daenerys chained up two of her three dragons because they were terrorizing the landscape. They'd killed, you know, livestock. They'd killed children. Mm. So she had to lock them away to show that she wanted to keep her people safe. But Tyrion decides, you cannot, like you said, you cannot live in captivity.
Yeah.
So he goes down there himself to free them.
Well, because he knows he needs them.
Yeah, he knows that's what Daenerys' empire needs, is to, you know, to let them out, because they don't do well in captivity, and they haven't been eating, as they've been saying. And he shows up, and he talks to them, and in the typical Tyrion Lannister fashion. Yeah, he gives this great speech.
It's about, weirdly emotional speech as well.
It really is. I mean, it's this wonderful Tyrion speech where he talks about, you know, when I was young, the only thing I ever wanted was a dragon. And I told my uncle, I said, I just want a dragon. It doesn't even have to be a big dragon. It could be a little dragon.
Yeah, he was like, it can be a small dragon, like me.
It could be a small dragon, like me. And then they told me, there are no more dragons. And I cried myself to sleep. And it's just, and typical Tyrion Lannister fashion. Yeah, it just connects with you. It's like
it
that
was an emotional highlight for the show, oddly.
It's almost like that moment when you're a kid and you find out all dinosaurs are extinct.
Yeah.
And then there you are face to face with, you know, something that you thought was so cool.
You've been playing with these big giant dinosaurs all your life. Yeah.
Well, you see the dinosaurs there, and you finally get a chance to connect with them. And he pulls off the neck chain around the one, and then the other one comes out, looks right at him, and then turns his neck to the side to show off, hey, pull this one off me too.
And when he doesn't do it quick enough, you see the dragon do his little nod like, hey.
Yeah, he's just like, here. And then he pulls it off. And then the two dragons, of course, you could tell that they're a little bit happier. And he walks back up the stairs. And then, again, showing how well the show is written, goes to his...
Daenerys.
And just goes, if I ever have another idea like that again, punch me in the face.
Yeah, because... you really think they're going to fry him, cook him, eat him like that.
Oh, my God, it's...
Here's a dwarf with these two giant dragons.
Yeah.
Come on.
And again, like Tyrion... uses his words and intelligence to get out of any situation.
So is anyone else expecting him to just ride a dragon at some point in the show?
I think it's coming,
If Tyrion Lannister rides a dragon, the internet will break.
Well, it could be worse.
I think we'll go way past the internet. The world will break and break.
There will be pictures of Peter Dinklage on a dragon all over the internet. And that's all you'll see.
Peter Dinklage for president, if that happens. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
You'll have the White Walkers break the wall on one dragon. You have Khaleesi. You have Peter Dinklage as Tyrion on the other. And then you have Jon Snow on the third dragon.
And just oh, my
internet,
God.
The and internet then, fucking and then breaks.
And then somewhere a Megadeth album cover is born.
Or if nothing else, that season's Game of Thrones soundtrack cover is born.
All right. Okay, so let's move on from that. I thoroughly love that scene, though. That might be the highlight of the season. One of the highlights of the season.
There was a lot of good scenes in this episode.
There was. It really was.
To me, it's one of the highlights of the show as a whole.
Okay, so real briefly, we move on to... what's the name of the city that Arya's in with the Two-Faced God?
The one with the coin that goes down. The
No-Faced God.
Come on, Wikipedia.
Brandos? No.
Something like that.
Essentially where Arya is blind and begging right
Braavos?
Now.
Braavos? Yeah.
Is it Braavos?
I think it is Braavos, yeah.
There's our Wikipedia.
I believe so.
Welcome back.
If not, like, you guys can scream at us and send us emails.
That's the city with the giant bank, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So
they're the one where the coin goes down the slide.
Anyway, we return to find begging Arya on the street. She's basically tested by the girl again, followed by her master, who looks way too much like Jesus Christ. And
you think so?
Who did in season two? Think, you know,
but not like fair. This. I mean, he was like in full on.
You're just like,
well, he had beggar clothes on.
Thank you, white Jesus.
The white robes.
He had the passion of the Christ hair. Thing kicking, man, with the hair and everything.
Santa Christ.
God forbid if we have that.
Anyway, the only thing he was lacking was the beard. Seriously.
Santa Christ.
And the donkey with the palms. But okay.
But anyway, so
give it another couple episodes.
Other than that, he basically tests her. He says, "I will feed the girl if she says her name."
The girl has no name. The girl has
doesn't need food.
I will feed her. I will clothe her.
I will give her vision back.
I will give her vision back.
Basically, girl has no name. Period. Yeah.
So you know what
she
was
passed the test,
right? And what was funny was, like, last episode we thought, oh, is this like her daredevil training? Oh, is this like, you know, her learning how to use other senses? No, this was her learning a lesson. Mm-hmm. This was her being told, you kept your identity by seeking revenge, and this was your punishment. Mm-hmm. We can take it away from you.
I'm not sure if it's a punishment as much as a lesson in this context.
Yeah, it's a lesson, but it's essentially like, you know, a punishment because from a parent that says...
She doesn't have her vision back. She might still be kind of training along the path because everything she's been doing within, like, the House of the Dead or that church or whatever you want to refer to it as...
House of the Dead.
It has kind of been training into that, you know, in that field, and it's interesting to see how that kind of transfers and whether she'll be continuing training as a blind person or whether she'll only regain her sight if she wears like a face or however we'll go with that.
Well, I think the whole point of it is too, and what they're trying to teach her is, it doesn't matter what your name is.
Mm.
You're a person. That's it. That's all you are. You're a person on this earth. It doesn't matter what your name is. Doesn't matter what you do.
Mm.
It just, you're here.
We are nihilists, Donnie.
Why are you talking? Anyway,
we believe
he
in
found
nothing
a good
Lebowski.
Place for a quote.
We believe in nothing, Lebowski.
He doesn't know anything else.
You sound a lot too much like Sprocket, like the SNL skit Sprocket.
Anyway, but anyway.
That is pretty close.
For me, you know, they're teaching her that she's just, you know, a being on this planet or on that
well
world, and
it just
that's
she,
it.
She can't be seeking her own agenda. She has to stay to the religion's agenda, essentially, mm-hmm. of her master.
Oh, look, yet another faith-based thing that we're talking about.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's any world building is going to have that to an extent, and this is actually taken in a really interesting direction. It has that kind of subtlety, you know, thrown into it with all the political, you know, aspirations as well. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Very much so. All right. So from high ground to the lowest of the low, and what I would like to call the next segment of the show, a portion of the show we talk about, which would be Ramsay the Bastard Antichrist.
When does he die?
Soon, hopefully.
God!
If he doesn't die this soon, then I'm going to kill him myself.
Oh, my God. I just... That episode...
Let's just build up to it.
Just like the show did.
Let's just go through it. I know it's painful. So, This whole Antichrist bastard scene starts with, basically, it's the head of what's now the Kostarks, head household, who, if you remember back to season two, Rob cut off his father's head with the whole killing because he killed a Lannister, blah, blah, blah. So he's now the head of the Kostarks. It's him, it's Ramsay, and his father. Mm-hmm. I can't think.
Bruce Bolton.
Bruce. So they're all there.
Why did he fall, Bruce?
So Ramsay just basically proposes that, he'll take half the houses in the north, including the Kostarks, and attack Castle Black.
Well, his argument was that those houses were like the main armies anyway, and the other ones were
the more powerful houses, he said. And he basically makes this proposal. His father rejects him. He says it's too bold. He said it would split the north, and it would label Ramsay as the Mad Dog, and then other people would treat him as such.
He is a valid point.
You mean he's not?
Right. So... after that, so what do you guys think about that? What do you think about his proposal, though? It's kind of bold. It's showing his
initiative. It makes sense, to be honest. Like, if you can have 80% of your military without, like, jumping through half the hoops, then, yeah, it's a valid point.
Well, they know that's where Sansa's going, mm-hmm. to go have her brother protect her. They know that's where she's going. They know that's where they can get her and bring her back.
Yeah.
And that's his whole point, is to go out there... Kill Jon Snow, get Sansa back, and
she's the only and Stark give him an heir. They know of.
Yeah, because they think the other two are gone.
Right.
So,
there.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, obviously, father rejects the plan. Then they come in the
Meister.
Meister, whatever.
Meister. King, your wife has given birth.
Meister, yeah. Or whatever, yeah.
Good tidings.
That's fair.
Good tidings.
Good tidings in the Game of Thrones show. How does that end up?
The queen has given...
Very quickly.
Your lady has given birth to a son.
To a son. Okay. So, upon hearing this, he hugs his father... And which I thought was, I saw it coming because of the angle of the shot, because they show the back of Ramsay and he's got a damn dagger on the back of his belt. Mm. I mean, how much more obvious? I would have rather they had changed that shot. I'd rather him not seen it, because then you just think it's a hug and maybe there's a little bit of sincerity to this asshole.
Well, we've never known him to be sincere, though.
But, yeah, so...
That's the kind of hug that Ramsay Bolton would give someone.
But instead...
In their defense, at least he didn't, like, fall off, like, a... What is it? Like, a bridge or something like that.
True, but still, and we'll get to that, too. But, what I just... I guess I would have done better without seeing the dagger ahead of time. Because at least it would have given me... Kept me thinking. Kept me guessing a little bit. But I knew it was coming. He hugs him, and of course...
Well... Especially
bye, Bruce.
Especially when Bruce, sits there and looks at his son and says, "Well, you'll always be my first." I thought, hey, Ramsay and him
have finally
reconciled, and they finally have a moment. Yeah. And he goes, "Oh, thank you, Father. That means the world to me." And stabs him, and I'm like, "What?"
Well, yeah, again, that's Ramsay. He's the new Joffrey, and he has to go above the cruelty and evilness of Joffrey, and. That's a high bar to surpass, and Ramsay has managed to do that slowly. Well, but this episode,
and just when you thought maybe his dad maybe deserved it because he kind of pushed him in that direction last episode, he kind of said, "Well, if your stepmother has a boy, you're in trouble," blah blah blah. Yeah,
Sansa has to have a boy,
right. Really putting some pressure on to this already unstable son of a bitch, but. Then he goes one step above, orders his new stepmother, who's just given birth to his brother, holds his brother and says, "Ah, my dear brother."
Mm. Oh my God, that freaked me out.
Yeah,
and gives it back, leads her into the dog chamber, and has the dogs eat his stepmother and his newborn brother alive.
Yeah, and he has that moment where his mother's being like, "Please, we're family. I'll do anything. I'll leave. I'll go back home." And he's like, "I prefer being an only child."
Yeah, watching this with Steph was like 5 minutes of her. It's just like, you knew what was coming. You knew the buildup. You knew it was going to be unpleasant. They didn't shy away from it, but Yeah, Steph. I mean, I gotta pass this one over to her. Just like I want to hear you just let everything out about this whole moment.
That was awful to watch. Are you kidding me?
No.
I was like, okay, you know, she wants to leave, take the baby, that's fine. And I honestly think that had she just said, we'll leave, we'll go home, we won't stay here, I think he would have let her. But then she was like, he's your brother. And I'm like, oh, there's the kicker.
Mm.
And I'm like, nope, that just ended it for you, honey. I'm sorry. But being a mother and having a little child myself, it was just, I'm like, oh.
It's the most vulnerable spot you can see a woman in that is a newborn, that has a new mother.
I mean, mm-hmm. You could almost see her laying on top of this baby to protect it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in turn, smothering it and stuff like that. But that was just awful. Awful to watch and to hear. And I was just like, my mouth hit the ground and I didn't know what to do. And I'm looking at John going, did they really just do this on TV?
But, and again, in the show's defense, that this is a show that has shown us incredibly violent acts.
They didn't
on the
show
this.
All
you saw after the dogs were released was just the look of Ramsay staring at her, and all you heard was sounds. You never saw the actual attack. I mean, and again, that goes into the power of the show and the scene, that you didn't see the attack, but you got every bit of the brutality.
Well, I mean,
you
can make an argument, even if you go back towards, like, Alfred Hitchcock films. Like, there's certain thing about maybe not seeing it that might add to it in certain scenes.
But this is the kind of show that has never done that kind of subtlety, to actually shy away from the violence.
However, I will say, after seeing this, I now want to see when Ramsay does die. I want to see him eaten alive by dogs, and I want to see every last bit of it.
Well, maybe,
my bloodlust has returned in full force.
Well, maybe,
what was once for Joffrey has now transferred to Ramsay.
Well, maybe with the Greyjoys, he'll get eaten by a squid.
I just want to see him torn apart, shred, slowly eaten
maybe
by
that,
one
that,
dog.
What was that Peter Benchley book with the squid, the Architeuthius, that has like, you know, the spines
it's,
that
maybe,
come out
maybe
of the suction cups?
I want him put into the pit of Harkoon where he's slowly digested over 1,000 years
maybe,
of agony
the dog,
and pain.
Maybe the dogs will eat a very important part of his body first and then, you know, then kill him off.
Maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe Theon will take his most beloved organ as well.
Yes.
Then throughout the rest of the season, he just wears it on his neck.
There you
like
go.
A necklace.
There you go.
All right, you guys are just sick, 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 sick.
And thus, Theo created the first bachelorette party.
No, but I mean, it's kind of like you look at like certain like cannibalistic tribes, like they would shrink heads and wear them like as actual.
So you're saying you need to have a shrinking dong just hanging around his head?
Why not?
Maybe. It would scare the shit out of me. Personally.
Make it into a key? I don't know.
No. He's going to do what Dolph Lundgren did in Universal Soldier, just have like that necklace of ears around his.
Watch this trick. Watch this trick. You just rub the tip and it gets longer. Watch.
I think we broke
Brian. And
when
it gets cold, it gets smaller.
I think we broke Brian.
Quick question. Is that not more terrifying than scalping? Out of curiosity.
You know, that really would be.
All right. Anyway. All right. So we've hit the low. We can only go up from here. So we're thrown to Sansa and Theon, and he's with...
Brianna
the Knight. Thank you. Too much
and
alcohol.
Audrey and Brianna Tarth.
Yeah.
And Podrick.
Basically, Theon says he shows his deep regret. He's for all that he's done wrong to the Stark family, saying he did this, he did that, he's so sorry. And Sansa says, well, everything will be forgiven when you join the Black. Your sins are forgiven. Because that was her, I guess, her plan for him the whole time. And he goes, and he says, well, no, I need to go home.
Yeah, he says, I don't want to be forgiven.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, and I thought about this just recently. When he says he's going to go home, I don't actually think he means the Iron Isles. I think he means back to Ramsay.
Oh, really?
Interesting.
Because that's his home.
Psychologically broken as he is, that may be the only home he knows, yeah.
It could be.
I don't know. Like he's heading home. I kind of assumed he meant the Islands just because that's where it cuts dramatically.
I think that's
after.
Where they want you to think he's going to go. Yeah,
that
might
well,
be a fair point.
That's a cutaway, but that's also something that you could lead the viewer into thinking something else.
Yeah,
too.
It kind of leads the viewer one direction, one way, something else.
I would agree with that, but I don't think he would because he wouldn't want to give up Sansa's location and where they're going.
I don't think he'll give it up because he told Sansa, he goes, I need to die for my sins, not be forgiven of them.
But... I don't know. We'll see. I think he's heading home, though. I will see. But my question to you guys, though, is do you think that everything that's happened to him, do you believe that he's paid the price for his sins already, though, through Ramsay? I mean, the man's been castrated and tortured and
to be honest,
everything else. Has he paid enough of a price for being the bastard that he was temporarily?
I'm not sure because that's a very subjective sort of thing, so I don't know.
To be honest, I think he paid for him being strung up by Ramsay in that season alone. That was more than enough for any human being to go through. I mean, yes, he did betray the Stark family. Yes, he did murder some beloved people. Yes, he did order two innocent farm boys murdered. He's done a lot of horrible things, but he's also been destroyed as a human being. Like, the Theon that we are currently watching is not that same Theon. Like, he is
broken.
He's gone. Yeah. So what we have now is not that same person. So no, he doesn't deserve to die because he's already dead.
Yep. All right. And speaking of home, the next scene, we're brought back to the Iron Isles for the first time in what's his last?
How long has it been?
Well, I think we were briefly there last season, but not for very long.
I don't think it was. I think last time was in season 4.
Yeah, it was a couple of seasons.
Because we didn't see the one Stark child until this season, and I don't think we saw the Iron Islands last season either.
Or maybe not the Iron Islands. We did see his sister last season.
Yeah, we might have seen her briefly when she tried to rescue Theon, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's a fair point.
Which they never explained that thing.
Mm. Yeah, we never saw her, like. Yeah, I mean, because last time we saw Theon's sister was like at the invasion of the mainlands, and we saw her trapped. And next thing we know, now we see her here, and it's like, okay, so I guess you got away somehow.
Yeah, and leaning off of that, we learn that the invasion of the Iron Isles on the mainland has failed. Mm-hmm. Like, their last stronghold has fallen, essentially. You know, and Theon's sister basically objects to her father's rule on waging the wars. She's ready to make peace at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, she said the only reason we even took them anyway is because they were away fighting a war, and now they're back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's time to, you know, and her father's just stubborn and doesn't want to seem to let go. He just wants to keep warring on.
Well, he's the fifth of the five kings.
He's the only one left.
Yeah. Right? He is, and until, you know...
Well, we'll get to it.
Until
it's only 2 minutes later,
until
really.
Until a guest star comes in. A surprise visitor.
So do you think... Let's just throw this out. Do you think her father is maybe just so caught up in his own grief that he no longer cares and that all he knows is war and all he wants is revenge at this point?
I mean,
it could be, because he's lost three sons, including
Theon?
It could
be, but if it's one thing this show has shown us in its themes, it's that the older generations, like the generations of, like, Tywin Lannister and all the other, like, fathers, figures that we've seen in this show, they have, I mean, hell, even Thorne at Castle Black, that they have held on to their older beliefs. Mm. They've held on to the old ways, and the show shows that when you do that, you're pretty much setting yourself up for death.
Well, it's like even... It's not even just the show. You could say that about the world we live in today.
Which is why I love this
the show. The older generation has their ways and things like that. And what they do. And, you know, your grandmother lived through the Depression. And she saved and watched everything.
Oh, the entire Great Depression generation.
So you had that... I mean, you have every generation has their own way of doing things. The king, the Iron Islands king, the reason he wants to do nothing but wage wars is because that's all he knows.
Yeah.
That's all they've ever done.
But, you know...
War after war.
Also, it does kind of speak to the Iron Islands culture as well. Like, they have the one motto,
What's dead will never die.
No, they have, like, pay the iron price, which more or less means you take it by force.
Yeah.
Like, that is kind of their culture. It's very based on, like, either the Nordic, like, barbarian sort of thing.
Yeah, kind of like a Viking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John, you seem like you had... Something you want to chime in with.
Well, what I was going to say before that, based on what you were saying, Steph, about, you know, the older generation holding on to their mentality, and I think that's one of the things I love about this show, is that when the themes of it, of holding on to old broken ways, is what's killing a world, I mean, dear God, I mean, look at a lot of the stuff that we know is the problem of the world today. Look at broken politicians, look at broken sex, look at, you know, all these things around us that we're just like, God, why do you keep doing this? We've seen that it doesn't work. Why do you keep doing it? This is what this show is speaking towards. I mean, the end of season four, the title was called, I mean, I believe it was called The Children. And essentially, that's what that show was about. That was the show about the younger generation rising up against the fathers. Tyrion kills his father at the end of the episode, and it's the segue of saying, hey, the older generation has to pass away for the newer one to create their own.
Well, to get back to Aaron's thing, you talked about Thorne and earlier and said, you know, he's an older generation and stuff like that. Well, if you look at what's going on now, they kill Jon Snow. He's the younger generation, right? Mm-hmm. Thorne is the older generation. He's like, no, the wildlings can't come in, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. We've fought them our entire lives. They're evil. Okay, well, then you have Jon Snow, the new generation, coming in going, yes, but we need to all get along, and things need to change, and a new regime has to come through.
Yeah, it very much speaks to your and John's point about generational differences.
Mm-hmm. So, one other point. They keep talking about these massive fleets they have. Where do they get the wood for these massive fleets? These are just a tiny little island with giant...
That's their massive income right now, is driftwood. Like, just keeps coming past their iron.
The other navies keep destroying, getting blown up or lit on fire. They keep collecting
driftwood. Oh, it's the fodder from Blackwater. Just, like, have, like, drifted towards their ship.
They're like, our fleets will never... Or nobody can mass our... You know,
we
meet
can
our
beat
numbers.
We can beat people on the water. We can't beat them on the land.
Right, and I'm like...
They said I was mad to build a boat out of iron, but I did it anyway. That boat sank. So I built it again. That boat sank as well.
And that's why you're crazy. All right.
So that's why they worship a drowned god. It's actually the first boat.
So speaking of the iron islands and how they are, they're these giant, like, I don't know, castles, I guess, and in between there are
like
just drawbridges.
That cracks me up.
Where is OSHA in the Seven Kingdoms?
Apparently nowhere to be found. So he's it's windy, it's storming, and he's walking out, and he's already having a hard time walking across this bridge, and he's met by a hooded figure who, although he's, even though this guy is much older looking, looks very middle aged, he's confronted by apparently his brother, which looks more like, you know, Aaron, your age, which, you know, you're in your 20s. And it's his brother, apparently.
Yeah, there's a big age difference
there. And we find out not only is it his brother, but his brother's been at sea and lost at sea, essentially. Or at least he thought he was. He's gone.
Yeah, and they have that fun little story about how they had to tie him to the mast and prevent him from jumping into this storm.
And how he cut out everybody's tongues after they untied him.
Yeah.
So he has, like, this legend of madness surrounding him.
Did he die? Does he... resurrect? I was so freaking lost.
I think that came out of left field. Okay.
I think they were just building
a very quick introduction to that character.
I think they're just building up where this guy, how kind of nuts this guy is, or whatever.
So or is he even real?
Well, I think he's real.
Dorne, Thorne, and the Iron Isles, we have three. Thorne from Castle Black.
Dorne
and Thorne and Iron Isles guy.
Yeah.
We've seen three... Oh, and also Ramsay's father. So that's four heads of, you know, heads of, like, royal families, or at least, like, some higher...
Noble families
that have all been killed off in two episodes.
And so, yeah, eventually, as John says, he throws him over the bridge into the icy water below, rocky water below.
And then it cuts to his...
his funeral.
Which is actually really interesting, because they send him out on this... It's almost with, like, rocks and stuff.
I thought it was they wrapped him in seaweed.
Yeah,
it's what it looked like.
That was pretty.
But it's
there's that code about how the creatures of the ocean will feast on him, sort of things. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a weird circle of life, sort of thing.
It was strange because it was like a Viking's funeral without the fire.
Instead of lighting them on fire,
you know, you don't give the fishes like burnt. You know,
it's interesting because, you know, going back to, like, the drowned god concept, they get rid of their dead by drowning him.
Yeah.
Like, more or less just sending them to the bottom of the ocean is, like, that weirdly fits. Like, it's a nice way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I thought was interesting was later on when Theon's sister, and I don't remember her name right now, I'm so sorry, she talks about becoming the new king. And this, again, priest... looks at her, goes, maybe you'll be king, and then, maybe you won't.
Yeah, which brings up the theory. So she says she vows on by the iron throne, the salt throne.
Salt throne, thank you.
That she'll find out who did this, and he goes, well,
who is he?
You might be king. We'll see if you survive. Apparently
there's like a council that selects the king on the Iron
Throne. It's either a council or a trial or something. Do you have
another kingdom that is like having another like dispute as to who the rightful heir is?
It's funny because you have that following the introduction of the former king's brother. And it's like, it seems like it's almost setting up for him to be the contender to replace the old king. But at the same time, if he's most well known for being batshit crazy, I don't see why anyone would want him king.
Right.
Well,
but it does seem like the setup.
As we've proven in the world that, you know, a nice king like Tommen can't succeed, maybe they want a batshit crazy person. I mean, it could be their Donald Trump.
But again, there's, like, a religious tone here.
Mm.
You have this, like, priest walking the old king out, you know, to his funeral.
Mm.
And again, more religion. This whole episode this had like nothing Francis Ford but religion. Coppola
blocking here and
it's about secession and how the religion essentially helps transition.
Yeah.
Well, what it sounds like to me now, I don't know that because I rewound it and watched it a couple times. It almost sounds like there's either like a fight to the death, some kind of tournament, or some sort of way of choosing a new king that's yet to come.
Until the Red Woman, you know, gives birth to another smoke monster and kills the person that wins.
I'm not sure if that's going to happen again. I think that might have been a one shot.
Hopefully that's done. I don't want to see that again.
The queef of death.
Anyway.
All right, so after all these deaths, lows, mauling of people, we finally get to the resurrection of Jon Snow.
Yep, more religion.
The last frame of the episode.
So, Ser Devron convinced. Finally,
Davos.
That was Davos.
Yeah, that was too. I put Devron in here. Sorry. Yeah,
I actually really like that name.
Ser Devron.
Too much alcohol. Apparently, when I was typing, I was drinking too. So, he convinces.
It's like an inner city name.
Yeah, it is, actually. Convinces. Alright, guys. Convinces Melisandre to try to bring back Jon. She doesn't really seem to believe in, or he doesn't seem to believe in any god, he tells her, but he's seen her do unnatural things before, essentially. She performs a ceremony, and pretty much nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
So she walks away. Or actually, the wildling guy walks out first.
Well, you see her repeat like the last bit of the incantation like multiple times, like
yeah.
And it was getting kind of frustrated,
trying to convince herself that it was going to work too.
And first the leader of the wildlings walks out, then she walks out, and then finally Davos. Finally. The guy who's had the most hope for John the whole time, maybe his biggest supporter since he's been dead, finally walks out of the room. And then all of a sudden you see
his wolf
peek up.
Yeah.
And his dire wolf.
Ghost.
Yeah. Ghost peeks up, and next thing you know.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the episode. What'd you guys think of the whole scene?
It was kind of interesting because it was a very slow scene.
It was a build up.
Yeah. Like, it's one of those things, like, after you see everyone walk away, you're like, oh, shit, like, maybe they were playing with my expectations, because this is kind of what I was expecting since the end of season 4, or season 5?
Five.
Yeah. Like, because you have the Red Lady there, you see him die, and you're like, oh, well, I see where this is going, kind of. And I was like, oh, well, after everyone walks out, I was like, oh, maybe they just fucked with me. Like, maybe they just tricked me into thinking this was, like, how it was going to go, and just... Like, there was that kind of doubt there because of how just slow-paced the entire scene was. But there was a very methodical way of, like, how she cleaned the corpse before, like, she actually tried everything. And it was a really interesting scene.
It was interesting. When she was cleaning the wounds, it almost looked like she was almost healing the wounds because they went from having kind of a deep...
Yeah,
scars almost.
Like, after all the blood's gone, like, it almost looks lighter than what it is.
Yeah, so she was doing something there, I think, even. But I don't know.
It was starting to work.
So this is like a whole test of faith and a whole, I don't know, it's like the only thing that kept standing by John's side was the wolf.
Mm.
I think it was a test of faith for her too, because she
But she walked out on it.
Well, it was a test of faith for her because she kept trying and trying and trying and hoping that it would work. And she lost faith in herself.
Yeah.
And I think that's why she walked out.
Yeah.
Because she was like, she wished there was more that she could do and she wished it would work. And it, and in her mind it didn't. And she's like, you know, she even told Davros, she goes, I don't know what I believe in anymore.
Yeah.
So.
It could also, it's a continuation of the theme too, is like she's held on to these beliefs and this faith that she blindly followed, much like the High Sparrow, much like everybody else that clings to the older ways. And then when it all crumbles around her, she does lose her faith, but she tries again. And if anything, it's like what Davos said, is like, I don't have faith, but I believe I've seen you do things. So she could be learning to adjust to the world. Yeah, so.
And I'm sorry, I'm waiting patiently for the day when, or the episode when Davros finds out Stannis A, killed his daughter, B, that Melisandre is the one that put him up to it, and C, when he finds out that Stannis was killed.
Mm-hmm. Well, you probably won't have to wait too many episodes. Like,
I'm hoping.
I'm thinking maybe 2 to 3 tops.
Because right.
Then I want to see what's going to happen to her. Yeah.
So, real quick, because we are running long on the show a little bit.
It was such a good episode.
It was a lot to cover.
It was jam-packed. I'm sorry.
So, my question is, last time we saw somebody resurrected like this, with this faith, the guy said every time he came back,
he lost a little piece of himself.
Yeah. So, my question to you guys is, will Jon Snow be the same? Will there be consequences for bringing him back? And will he bring back something not quite so maybe unnatural with him? I mean, you're opening a gateway to the other side, so to speak.
That's the first thing that went through my head the second she brought him back to life, because every time her abilities are utilized, something always happens badly. Like,
it's a monkey paw sort of gift.
Yeah, because think about it. Stannis Baratheon, the first thing he did when he used the leeches to suck the blood, to, like, you know, throw him in the fire and say the names of his enemies he wanted dead, we ended up with the Red Wedding, people.
Mm.
So something bad could happen here.
All right. I think I got quick fire questions, and I really want to ask him, so let's just make those as quick fire as possible. Okay. What role do you think Bran's going to play in the war to come, and in which war do you think it'll be? Do you think it'll be in the South, or do you think it's going to mainly be with the White Walkers?
Mainly with the White Walkers. To what extent, I'm not sure.
Okay.
John? White Walkers, definitely, because he's going to be the game changer.
Okay. Steph?
Bran playing. It'll probably be the war in the North. Yeah, White Walkers.
Yeah.
And what role is he going to play?
Yeah.
It's too hard to tell.
It's too early.
Okay, I think it'll be with the White Walkers, and I think he's going to help Jon. I honestly think he'll be by his brother's side. Why are we being reintroduced to the history of the Starks, and what role do you think it will have going forward? Aaron?
I think it's probably going to build up into some of the fan theories of especially the origins of Jon Snow. Provide a little bit more context for, like, his origins and for how things got to this point.
Okay. John?
R plus L equals J.
The theory continues. Okay.
Ditto.
I'll just
go with it. You wanted quick, dude.
All right, you're right.
As quick as you can make it.
There you go. Ditto it is.
All the fans will know that one.
Do you think Theon will become the king of the Iron Isles?
No.
No.
Negatory.
Me neither. I think
he's dead.
I think he's dead. Lannisters versus the Faith. Who wins?
Lannisters.
Yep.
Lannisters.
Yep.
Faith.
The Faith will kill the kids, but the Lannisters will have the last laugh.
Oh, the Mountain's going to keep on killing.
The Mountain will continue to kill.
I foresee the bitch totally tearing the Faith a new one.
The people he kills
I think eventually she will, but right now, I think the Faith has kind of got them by the...
By the balls, maybe?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, that's fair.
By the Oath Keeper.
All right. How ruthless will Tommen have to become?
I think he's getting killed off without actually being that ruthless.
You think he'll get away
with it? I think Cersei's going to be the one who's going to be ruthless, and I think he's going to be kind of in his own little room.
Okay. John?
Tommen doesn't have it in him. He'll try, but it's Cersei will bury her third child.
Gabby?
Yeah, I think the Faith is going to get Tommen, and Cersei's going to come back and rain hellfire on them.
Yeah.
Yes. Cersei's going to go, like, Corleone on him.
Yeah, I actually think it's the Sand Snakes that's going to take him, but I could be wrong.
I still think there is a possibility that Cersei could actually turn him ruthless eventually, especially if she dies.
Mm. So, right, well, he's still got Margaery in the crypt, so.
And she's...
So you're expecting him to have that Anakin Skywalker moment?
Maybe, yeah, because not only...
I hate you! Well, and the sand!
No, he'll turn like he... I killed them all. I killed the women, the children. Mm. He could become that.
He may hate the sand. It'd be kind of a cool
switch, actually.
Yeah, you're right.
Hit by the sand, meaning Dorne.
Yeah. Can Tyrion get control of the dragons and use them to save Khaleesi's kingdom in her absence?
Control, probably not. Use, probably.
You think he used some sort of political way of using
it? Well, I mean, I think there's ways of manipulating the dragons or having them, you know...
Symbolic.
Yeah, like maybe. Using them in, like, an advantage to either attack other neighbors or just letting them run rampant as, you know, kind of a... A show of force, a way to kind of scare off neighboring enemies. Whether he can actually manipulate them or not, I'm not sure.
Okay, John?
Tyrion will take control of the dragons after he will have a sword forged for him, and this way, when he goes flying on a dragon with a sword in hand... He will make the Meatloaf Bat Out of Hell album cover look like really? Garbage.
I think you'd go for the battle axe. Like, isn't that what he used in the Battle of Blackwater?
He used the axe, yeah, but the image of Tyrion with a sword and a dragon will definitely overtake any heavy
metal. If you go to classic fantasy, anyway. Like dwarves and gnomes, like they have, like, there's like
giant. All right, axes. Guys. All right. Steph.
Will he get control of the dragons?
Yep.
Possibly. Will he save them? Will he use them to save her kingdom? Absolutely.
All right. We've thoroughly dissected this. We're coming up on a minute five, so or an hour 5 minutes.
That was a long minute.
Yeah.
Let's just get right
to the hyperbolic chamber.
Oh God, DBZ. Let's just go right to final thoughts. All right, Stephanie, girls first, ladies first.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I give it an absolute A+. This was a fucking phenomenal episode. It was great. I loved it. I cannot wait to see the rest of the season.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I gave this one a solid A+ for sure. How can you not? Wow, what an episode. I mean, it was jam-packed. Highs, lows, resurrection of Jon Snow to Ramsay, that motherfucker. Killing his family, throwing his brother and his stepmom to the dogs. I just, you know, like I said, I want to see him just torn a piece by piece, slowly. Anyway,
Bolton gets a hold of the torture chamber, or Theon gets a hold of the torture chamber.
Yeah, exactly. We got to see the return of Bran. We got a look back at the early Starks. Good lord, just so much going on here. A++. Johnny.
You know what? This show, I don't know if this show has ever had a downside. I mean, or a down point. And this is an episode that continues to show off how great the writing is, how great the cast is, how, again, I mean, we can go into, like, how awesome the production value of the show is, but it's just an overall flawless TV show, and this is one of the episodes that shows why there is such a great following behind Game of Thrones. Because we love the characters, we love where they go, we love where the story takes us. We love that we can spend over an hour analyzing a show that's an hour long because of everything that they have in it. There is so much to this world, and this episode has proven that again. So yeah, it's a solid A+.
Yeah, and I've had to cut you guys short more than once, so go ahead.
For me, it's a solid A+. This is one of those episodes that really makes you wish HBO did something to the Netflix model where you could just binge it.
Yeah.
Like, if you had the opportunity just to run through it all, like, in a single sitting...
Oh, if you have HBO Go, you can. Like, they have the entire show on there.
No, I mean, like, just for, like, the season.
The whole season.
Oh. Yeah, like, if they just released the entire season at once, if you could just binge watch it all... like in one go, you'd just be like, yeah, there'd be a lot of people that would, and myself included. This is one of those episodes that really just encourages
I'll be back in 10 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I would lose a couple days because I'd go back and have to rewatch it and just take everything in like this. Because I like the weekly, the fact that you get a week to digest it.
Mm. I think you and I would sit there and look at Abby and go, honey, can you change your own diaper? Mommy and Dad, you're busy.
There.
We got the coffee and the Red Bull. Let's go. Like, party time.
There you go, kid. Just here's the iPad. Watch your videos while you sit on the toilet. You're good for the next day.
There's some food in the fridge. We love you. Bye.
We'll be ordering pizzas occasionally. You'll take all you want.
Have food. It'll be fine.
There's snacks around.
Just don't watch what we're watching.
And for child welfare, their address is. No, I'm kidding. All right.
3-5.
So. Where can you find Midwest Guys? I'm going to make this real, real quick because we've gone so long.
Everywhere.
Just go to google.com, put in the number 4 Midwest Guys. You'll find our YouTube page, our Twitter page, our Podbean page where all of our podcasts are listed as well. Everywhere, Facebook, YouTube, everything. Twitter.
Feel free to rate us, review us, send us questions.
Please.
That
That's the only thing. We want to hear back from you, so hear back from us as soon. Please just... Any kind of feedback would be appreciated at this point.
Let us know our theories are completely off.
Yeah, if we're completely batshit crazy. All right. So, with that in mind, Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, not a problem.
Johnny, thanks for joining us.
As always.
Stephanie, thank you.
Yeah.
And for B. Willie saying, once again, don't love anybody because they end up dying in this. They're just going to die.
Love no one in life.
And Ramsey must be torn to shreds. Shreds, I say.